content of the following program is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, treatment, or cure. Always consult your physician or a health professional with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition.
One Life Radio is brought to you by our sponsors. Great companies like Sun Warrior, the pioneers of plant-based protein. From the sun to the plant to you, go to sunwarrior.com to learn more about all the products and use the code OLR for 20% off your order. Enviromedica, makers of Terraflora, a novel broad-spectrum symbiotic combining spore-form probiotics and advanced food-based ancient prebiotics. Find Terraflora and the full line of products at enviromedica.com. Ned CBD, keep it simple, keep it natural with Ned CBD. And good news, animal lovers, Ned's full spectrum hemp oil is not just for humans, it's great for humans' best friend. That's right, it's not just for you, it's for your canine or feline as well. Explore Ned's line of full spectrum hemp products at helloned.com and use the code OLR at checkout for 15% off. Paleo Magazine, now all digital. Go to paleomagazine.com to subscribe. The Wellbeing Journal, Veg World Magazine, the International Society of Sports Nutrition, and Thorne Research. Visit our dispensary at oneliferadio.com for 20% off and free shipping. You can find more information on all of our sponsors, including links to listener discounts, on the oneliferadio.com sponsor page. Thank you for listening to One Life Radio.
Higher, baby. Do you want to go higher, baby? Well, you're in the right place, that's for sure. Welcome to One Life Radio. This is Bernadette with Ronaldo Davis, broadcasting live from Dallas, Texas, on iHeartMedia and on KMET in sunny Southern California on ABC News Talk. How are you doing today, Ronaldo?
I'm feeling good, but I got to tell you, I took a run yesterday, and it kind of took a lot out of me because I skipped the day on Wednesday. It rained, and yeah. I wish I'd never done that. I should have ran in the rain.
Yeah, running in the rain. I used to love to run in the rain because, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, you got to take a shower typically if you work out the sweat anyway. And especially if you're a guy, it's not like you have a lot of hair maintenance. But, I worked out a little bit yesterday, but I'm really looking forward to training with Tina here in just a couple of hours. It doesn't take long. Like just in a few weeks of getting back to weightlifting, my body is quickly transforming. And, you know, I like it. Who doesn't, right?
Right.
Who doesn't like to, you know, see definition in their legs or wherever on their body? It's just a good feeling. And I just feel stronger. I feel better. And so it's all good. It's all good. Why are you sore today?
A little bit. I'm feeling a little weird, like a little fatigued a little bit.
A little fatigued. Okay. Well,
yeah, a little fatigued. Yeah, it kind of took a lot out of me. I guess because I skipped that day on Wednesday, but I'm starting to come around, but yeah, I'm definitely a little tight. I guess I probably need to stretch some more.
Yeah, well, you know what? You need to do those inchworm stretchy things. I'll send you a video of it later on today. They really work really, really well. But, you know, I get a lot of exercise just running around with all my dogs on the property, that's for sure.
Oh,
and
yeah.
and the adoption for the new dog that doesn't have a name yet was an adoption failure the other day because he's too rambunctious and there's a couple of small children in the home. And so, you know, I'm bordering on keeping him, even though, you know, the last thing I need is another dog, but I'm really bordering on it. And I'm thinking about naming him Luke. What do you think about the name Luke?
I like Luke. I like that name.
You like Luke?
Yeah.
And I was thinking Bixby, but then that sounds too snobby. And I got that name from the Bixby Roasting Company, which is the coffee service at Subaru when I went to go get my car serviced yesterday. So I was like, no, that's maybe a little too snappy. But, you know, animals are a big part of our life. They are. And I love each and every one that I've rescued. I love each and every one that I own. And I can't think of a better time to introduce Laura Davies, who is the Vice President of Communications at the SPCA. That's the Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals of North Texas. Their website is spca.org. And you're not going to believe what we're talking about today. So a lot of different things, but one in particular we're focused on is pet scams during COVID-19. So, Maura, how are you doing today? And what on earth is going on with pet scams during COVID-19?
It's crazy. Doing great, and hope y'all are doing the same. I'm also, just quick note, I'm also really getting back into this, the swing of walking. Been walking every single day at least 3 miles for 6 weeks, and I love it. Anyway,
good.
Besides that, yay, healthy stuff.
Yeah.
But right now during COVID-19, there is a huge resurgence, unfortunately, not just in the U.S., in Great Britain too, and other countries, of scamming people, scamming others, selling mainly puppies. And the scary thing right now, it's awful. So what's happening is people will go online and they'll see an ad on Facebook, or they'll see a listing on Craigslist, or they'll get a phishing email, book an email, and they'll say, come to this website, come buy our puppy. Well, they think, okay, oh, yes, I want a puppy because we're home more, and let's bring a puppy home. This is a great time. We'll be here to train him or her. And they get a little bit further down the process, and all of a sudden there's another fee here, and oh, there's shipping, oh, there's an extra crate, and oh, COVID-19, there's so many other restrictions in place, you have to keep on paying us. Well, as soon as the scammer gets however much money they're looking for out of their mark, they disappear, and it turns out there was no puppy to begin with. So it's just awful.
Well, I know this is going to sound a little crass, but shame on them for trying to even buy a puppy and not adopting a dog that already exists. So I have a real
adopt, don't shop.
Yeah, you know how I feel about it. It's like, why would we unnecessarily kill and you know, euthanize animals that that we don't have homes for, and allow these other breeders to breed puppies? It's just, it shouldn't be allowed. It just really shouldn't. And if they do want to breed puppies, and we've said this for years, they should be paying taxes on that money. You know, they take these animals, they use them up, they sell them in parking lots or wherever, treat them horrible, and just make money off of a living being when it's wrong. So, it's like, when are we going to learn? Like, the environment has so many problems. The last thing we need to do is to put more stuff in the environment, and that includes animals that have been euthanized unnecessarily. But, you know, are there a growing number of pet scams happening under the COVID-19 quarantine, or is that just one thing that people are doing? Are they doing other things?
Well, I mean, this has been going on for some time, but looking at data from the Better Business Bureau, the reports rose from 12 reports in 2019 to 38 reports in 2020 across March and April. So that's a 191% increase. So that's people who have reported stuff like this to the Better Business Bureau. And this is, you know, in Texas. And so this is a real thing. This is not just one of those things that you read online and somebody's like, oh, sure, this must be happening. No, this is happening. But it's really important to know what to look for.
So what are the warning signs? What do you look for? How do you know that is there any kind of, you know, specific indicators that an ad may be a scam?
Yes, definitely. And actually, some of these indicators are very similar to the ones that you need to look for with puppy mills. So first of all, this person is usually very far away. They'll usually tell you there's just no way. This has to be sight unseen. The pictures could potentially be a little too perfect looking. It's a little bit difficult to tell, but if you can't meet the pet beforehand, responsible breeders always let you meet the pet before you do anything final. They let you meet at least one of the parents, usually the mother, but sometimes both, and you can go and visit the place where these animals are. If none of those things is the case, then you will definitely want to walk away. Anyone who's sitting there saying, oh, well, it's $200 for this, and $1,500 for that, and $1,000 for this, those are all red flags. That's a scam.
They really are. And so are any of these scammers ever caught? And if they are, what's the penalty? Is there any penalty?
You know, I've only heard of one over the years. It was a few years ago that was caught. And there are some laws in some states that can hold people accountable, but it is so difficult to catch people, especially if you're working online. You know, the person could have a complete fake email account that they're working with. They could be giving you a different name, different age, different gender, different everything, and then they can just disappear into a puff of smoke online. So it's hard. I mean, there might be a penalty if you can catch them, but because that's so difficult, a lot of things, the only penalty that you'll see is you'll see a Better Business Bureau rating of an F.
Mm-hmm. Big deal, right?
If nothing else, then at least look on Better Business Bureau. They're wonderful, and they do so much to help everybody, especially in these times.
Well, yeah. And, you know, there's good stories out there. There's bad stories out there. There's always going to be scammers because there's always going to be lazy people on the planet that think that they can make money by scamming people instead of just good old-fashioned hard work and integrity. But I was sitting having a party last night, very small, just me and two other people, two friends of mine. One of them, Logan, who recently adopted one of the three puppies, that a friend of mine found dumped in a park. And he was playing with the new boy, Luke, or whatever I'm going to name him.
I like
and they ran around. They ran around for hours. You know, the little dog that she adopted, who, by the way, had either been run over by a car or thrown out of a car, that has disabled back legs. And you should have seen him romping around. It was so darn cute. And it just, you know, made us both feel good that we rescued these animals off the street and giving them a loving, good home. And there's no better feeling in the world. There really isn't. And I think of a story, my former brother-in-law, Larry North, and his wife, Brenda, and I, his family were sitting at Maggiano's having a family dinner right before I married his brother. And anyway, they were talking about getting a new dog, and they were going to get, like a boutique dog. And I spoke up at the dinner table and said, why would you do that when so many animals are being destroyed every single day? I'm sure you could find a beautiful dog at the SPCA, and I think that's where they got Bliss. They got a beautiful dog that they named Bliss with one blue eye and one brown eye, who was completely like white with like almost like a caramel color coating on part of his body. And this is the crazy thing. Then when they were there, they adopted a cat too that matched Bliss, and they named him Buddha. And so they've got these two beautiful animals that look like they custom ordered them, okay, out of a magazine or something. I mean, they're beautiful animals. And they found them at the SPCA. So, you know, you hear stories like that, and you just think, why would anyone want to buy a pet, or especially a dog? You know, it's more dogs than cats, although I'm sure it happens with cats too. But I'm a breeder, at least right now, until all the animals have homes. Then, you know, we can, you know, entertain the idea of maybe breeding animals again. But it seems wrong on every level, and it seems very entitled to me, like extremely entitled, that kind of mentality. What do you think?
You know, I just think it's always best to check with shelters. That is the easiest, quickest, best way to make sure you're not getting scammed. You're there in person right now. We have a virtual adoption counseling every Thursday and Saturday right now at the SPCA of Texas at our two shelters. And people can come in and do social distancing style meet and greets and drive up adoptions. So we're being very, very careful. And that way you're seeing the animals in person. You're seeing where they come from. They are vaccinated. They are spayed and neutered. They are healthy. And you will go home with a new best friend who is up to date on everything they need. And it's just, you're ready for a match made in heaven at that point.
Oh, yeah. Are you staying with us? We're going to go to break here in just a second. Are you staying with us?
I can if you'd like. Sure.
Sure. All right. Well, let's do it. I've got the latest copy of Happy Paws, like I bought last week. Remember I told you about it? Let's talk about all things dogs and cats and everywhere in between. So we're going to go to break. Everyone stay tuned. More coming up with more babies and the SPCA of North Texas. Stay tuned. Welcome back to One Life Radio, everyone. This is Bernadette with Ronaldo Davis and Maura Davies. She is the Vice President of Communications at the SPCA, that's the Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals of North Texas. You can find her at their website, spca.org. They do incredible work all over North Texas, protecting animals, not just cats and dogs, horses, pigs, donkeys. I mean, we've had all kinds of stories over the years, haven't we, Maura?
Yes. Oh, my gosh. So many stories come flooding back.
The one that I think is the funniest, I'll never forget it because I was so green back then too. It was just so awkward. And you had something like 8 donkeys, didn't you? You guys got like 8 donkeys overnight. Oh, do you remember that?
I do.
I hope they all got good homes. You know, I would mind a couple of donkeys, but don't they hee-haw really loud like whenever they want and do like that brazing or whatever it's called? Or what do they call that when they, you know, they, I can't think of the name of it.
It's braying. So yes, they
braying.
Bray. It can be pretty loud and it's super cute. Donkeys are so precious. Like any big animal though, I always recommend know what you're getting into. If you're not an experienced equine owner, definitely spend a lot of time getting to know what the equine's needs will be, what their food. They need a farrier to take care of their hooves. Their teeth have to be floated on a regular basis. They need specific vaccinations. So, and then living quarters, and they eat so much more food, and they're amazing. It's just, you got to be prepared.
Yeah, you got to be prepared. That sounds very expensive, too, and like you need a lot of land as well. Yeah, my niece has a refuge out, I don't know, about 150 miles west of Houston. And she's got a couple of donkeys. She's got 3 horses she took from the SPCA. I don't know how many dogs she has. She just picked up a little kitten, but it's a genetic defect in the family where we can't say no to any kind of animal. But, you know, I wanted to give a special shout out to, Ned, by the way, because this Happy Furry Friday segment is now brought to you by Ned. And good news, animal lovers, because Ned's full spectrum hemp oil is not just for humans. It's also great for humans' best friends as well. So get yours at helloned.com and use the code OLR for 15% off your first order. And I have to tell you, I'm pretty sure you could probably use the hemp infused body butter, on a pet as well. You know, like on their joints and stuff like that. I have a really bad right leg from pulling a hamstring several years ago. And of course, when one part of your leg is messed up, like your whole leg is messed up. But when I put it on my knee, it really does diminish the pain where I nearly don't even feel it. So keep it in mind for yourself as well. But, you know, I picked up a copy of Happy Paws. I told you that when you were on last week. And I really like this magazine. I got it at Sprouts. We have a new Sprouts in the neighborhood. But there's one article in here about fraidy cats and dogs, about experts offer insights to managing 3 of the most common phobias that dogs and cats experience. And then one article is minimize the meows, understand and overcome your cat's nighttime crazies so you can get some restful sleep. And one of them is about, you know, why a dog's pain matters. And I would add to that why any animal's pain matters. But boost your dog's quality of life by managing his pain from osteoarthritis. And these are all topics that we talk about and we've talked about over the years. But is there any advice that you want to give out to our listeners today? Maura, let's start with fraidy cats and dogs. Insights to dogs, most common are dogs and cats. Biggest phobias. The first one is loud noises. What do you have to say about loud noises with animals?
A lot of pets have fearful behaviors because of trauma or just because they were not socialized. It could be so many other reasons. There could be health issues at play. The first best thing you can do for any of that is to check with your veterinarian, make sure there's not a physical cause. And if it's a behavior cause, especially if it's severe, it's great to start working with a behaviorist. But in terms of fear of loud noises, pets that maybe that develops after something significant in your life that's traumatic, like a tornado or something, there is a way to help desensitize pets to noise. But if the trauma is really deep, it's going to take a long time. And that's why I always say it's best to consult a behaviorist, and not just any behaviorist, but one that's going to be focusing on positive rewards-based training. No negative training.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Well, and sometimes it's very deep, like you said. It's like fear on steroids. They never forget. My dog, Mick, will not go in, you know, because I have a sunken living room. He will not go down into this one part of my house. I could have a fresh steak and throw it down on the ground in that area, and he will not go down there no matter what.
Mm-hmm. That can happen. Yeah, it can be very scary for dogs.
Mm-hmm. Well, another one in this article is the phobia of situational stress.
Mm-hmm. Well, that could be anything. So during a thunderstorm is probably one of the most common there. So, for example, my sweet dog, Skeet, when he was alive, he was terrified of thunderstorms. I think he could feel the change in the atmosphere And anytime a thunderstorm was coming, he was under the coffee table, under the bed, mm-hmm. in the closet. And so if you know there's a situation that provokes stress in your pet, it's also a good time to work with your veterinarian. If it's severe and your animal is injuring themselves, there is medication.
So yeah.
Otherwise, there are behavioral outlets you could take.
Well, you know, and that, you know, they have emotions and feelings and processed thoughts just like we do. A third on this list is the phobia stranger danger. And what it mm-hmm. is negative experiences that can make cats or dogs, especially those who weren't socialized well as youngsters or experience an abusive past, fear people that they don't know. And this fear may even be gender specific. And I've seen that. I have, like, my new dog. I had someone on the property last weekend, and this person had a hat on. And the dog didn't like him. And I kept thinking that it was the hat, that somebody in the dog's past, maybe that abused him, wore a hat.
Yes, that can totally happen. We also see pets that are afraid of people with cameras. Not necessarily that the camera did anything to them or a person with the camera did anything, but it just looks weird. It's like you see this, instead of seeing a person that your dog might be used to looking at, they see this weird one-eyed thing coming at them, and they're like, whoa, I don't know what that is.
Well, and, you know, animals can get, like I said, they get just as afraid as we do, and they suffer from anxiety and all kinds of stuff. In this article mm-hmm. or in this magazine, too, they had minimize the meows. Okay, so understand and overcome your cat's nighttime crazy so you can get some restful sleep. So are all cats crazy at night, or is it just mine?
A lot of cats are. It's not just you.
What's at the root of it? They sleep all day, so they party all night? I mean, is that what's up?
You know, that could potentially be it. The cats are more naturally nocturnal, and we joke around and we call it she's singing the song of her people. Our cat Opal is being on roaming around the house. Now, last night she had decided that she was going to have a fun time because she found the bag of cat treats, and while we were asleep, brought the cat treats to our room, started opening the bag. It's about the time I woke up to her crunching. So about the time I removed the bag of treats and say, okay, it's not time to eat, settled back in, then she's in the living room going, meow, meow. But there could be other causes at play, especially, you know, if it's an unstayed, unneutered pet, they're going to be more prone to nighttime crazy yowling.
Yeah.
There could be a behavioral cause that, again, if it's a complex issue, the advice that I usually give people is work with your veterinarian about strategies.
Yeah. It's difficult. It can be difficult, but it's so rewarding mm-hmm. when you have a pet that you're close to. So always great to have you on the air. We're gonna go to break again. Laura, thank you so much for jumping on with us today and making our Furry Friday a better one with all
thank
of your
you
knowledge
so
over the years. All right. Okay. Thanks so much, Maura Davies. You can find her at the SPCA.org. She is the Vice President of Communications. So stay tuned, everyone. We have a fantastic show coming up. We've got Sam Morris back. We're going to be talking about does trying to fix ourselves block us from living our lives? We'll find out. Stay tuned. More coming up. You're listening to One Life Radio. One Life Radio. This is Bernadette with Ronaldo Davis and our new regular, Sam Morris. I just love having you on the show, Sam. Let me tell people about you. If they're listening for the first time, Sam Morris is the founder of the Unbreakable Man Project, an interactive web-based personal development program for men wanting to slay their mental dragons of depression, anxiety, and addiction. He is a certified personal development coach, recovery consultant, and health coach. His website is themanunbreakable.com. That's themanunbreakable.com. Or you can follow Sam for daily wisdom at #ManUnbreakable and hashtag Slay Reagan. So great to have you back on the show. How are you doing today, Sam?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. I really like this topic that we're talking about today, which is does trying to fix ourselves block us from living life? So the term fix myself implies that something about me is broken. Is that the case?
Well, no, nothing about you is ever broken. And the thing about fixing yourself is that we all come into situations in our life where, whether that's addiction or depression, mental health, whatever it is, where we do actually need to make adjustments and better ourselves and personal growth. But what happens is that we get so comfortable and so the pattern of fixing gets so dug in that we end up, all we do is fix ourselves. So we're constantly trying to fix ourselves, which we don't realize. It feels good to fix. Like, it feels good to, if something's wrong, to put a Band-Aid on a cut, right? But at the same time, yeah, what we don't realize is that every time that you say, I'm going to fix myself, you're actually telling yourself that I'm broken. So what happens is you stay in that broken mindset, because you're really, I mean, fixing is a very positive, it's like a positive connotation where it's like, I'm in the process of fixing myself. That's great. If something happened, turn your life around, right the ship. But when you pitch a tent there and you stay fixing yourself all the time, the reverse conversation is that you're broken.
Yeah, no, I get it. And I think all of us tend to like buy, you know, self-help books or books that we think that are going to encourage us or maybe give us a nugget of wisdom. And sometimes I think that doing too much of that doesn't allow you to tap into the wisdom that you might already have there, but you're just not recognizing it.
Right, exactly. And so the thing about those books is, like you said, like it opens up windows and it opens up faucets of things you didn't know about. It, you know, shines light on some things. And at the same time, so you, instead of always needing to fix yourself, one of the things you can do is look at it as enhancements and shift that framework in your head. Because once you shine a light on things that you needed to correct or fix, like if you're terrible at relationships, you know, a lot of people are just really bad at relationships. They don't know how to communicate. So the communication needs to be fixed. But once that communication gets fixed, you know, it's like you go out and use it. You don't keep a car in the shop with an oil change to keep changing the oil before you put the 5,000 miles or 10,000 miles on it, right? You fix the car.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. How does this type of thinking start?
Oh, man. It starts with core beliefs, really. When we realize that the core belief is that something is wrong with us. And when we go back, at 0 to 7 years old, we realize that as a child, like, there was something about what we were doing that established a core belief that there's something wrong with us. And a lot of it, really, what it does is it goes back to, this is not all of it, but a part of it is the way we grade kids, is we grade them on what they don't know. You know, if you get an 87 on a test, like you're not really graded on the 87% you got right. You're more focused on the 13% you got wrong. So it breeds this I don't know is wrong. To say I don't know is wrong, because you're going to get, what's going to happen is if you say I don't know, your grades is going to get dinged for it. So going forward, when we say that we need to fix ourselves, it comes from a place of inherently being wrong, inherently being broken, inherently like something is always wrong.
Uh-huh.
And so that
makes a lot of sense.
By saying that you need to fix just perpetuates the conversation of I am broken.
Yeah, it's an interesting perspective, and it is true, and it does start when at a very early age, as soon as you enter school, you're basically judged on the knowledge that you, like you said, that you're graded by what you don't know, not what you do know, right?
No, yeah, it's just a hell of a paradox that it reinforces that there's always something wrong and there's always something broken and we always need to be better. That we always and yes, like constant growth and personal growth and self-development is great, but when it gets to the point where it has the fixing conversation, it just becomes, it's a law of diminishing returns.
Yeah. When you coach people, and because you're a certified personal development coach, recovery consultant, mm-hmm. and health coach, and an expert in addiction, I might add as well, because your story in itself is so fascinating. Is this part of what you went through with your addiction? Is always feeling like you had to fix yourself, like there's something wrong with me, I have to fix myself, and did that maybe inhibit your ability to just embrace yourself and love yourself as you are and realize that, yes, I have an addiction problem, but that doesn't mean that I'm a completely broken person?
Absolutely. It actually had it had that effect at first, where it was, you know, like there's so many things that come up with addiction, and that's broken relationships, you know, strained relationships with parents, with siblings, with friends, loss of jobs, like so much loss with addiction that we do spend a lot of time fixing stuff. And so we get so into the ingrained in that I need to make up for lost time, or I need to fix this. I need to fix this relationship. I need to fix myself. And so there comes a point when, for me, there came a point when, yeah, it was like, I'm not loving myself, because I'm always, you know, you can feel it in your posture, really, like you're hunched over as opposed to kind of upright. And so when you're hunched over like that, it reverberates. The vibration is not there. The high vibration living is not there. So there's no self-love there. And then what it did in turn, though, is it triggered me into like acting as if I loved myself. Because when I stopped fixing and realizing that, you know, self-love is the way out of it, that like treating yourself well, working out, eating well, meditation, reading, whatever it is on your list of self-love, that is what is going to take you out of being fixed. Because once you realize you start loving yourself, you can't be fixing yourself. So to love yourself is to fix yourself, but you can't be broken if you love yourself.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I was just thinking about so many people. Of course, it's not January, it's May, but so many people at the beginning of each year say, oh, my New Year's resolutions, all these resolutions, I'm going to fix this, I'm going to fix that. How bad is that for you?
Again, it's a framework mindset thing, because it's bad in the sense that there's no sustainability to it. That's why I think it's like by February 1st, 80% of New Year's resolutions are no longer, because there's no sustainability in that I need to fix, because then you beat yourself down with that conversation, that internal subconscious really conversation about I am broken. And so that's just that there's no self-confidence there. There's no accomplishment there. There's no level of achievement there. And so when you look at something, you say there's going to be no positive reward at the end of this. There's no incentive to keep doing it. So if you're always telling yourself I'm broken, I always need to fix, then you're inherently, it's a negative connotation in the sense that I'm always going to have to do this, and it overwhelms. It becomes that's when things like discipline become a negative thought. You know, discipline. I posted about this the other day. Discipline, really, is another form of the word love. Like when you're disciplined with your partner, for example, in communication, and you don't fly off the handle in the middle of an argument and say something mean, that's love. That's having love for the other person. When you're disciplined about your self-care routine, that's love.
I love that.
When you're
I really do. I mean, how many of us? I mean, yeah, I had it happen to me just not that long ago, and I was upset with myself for losing my temper a little bit, you know, because love is patient, love is kind. You know, that's a very old expression, but it's so true. It really is true.
Yeah.
And so you're saying that it comes down to discipline, to just really, you know, disciplining yourself, almost like being very, and right now I'm studying the Stoics, Ryan Holiday. Yeah. I don't know if you know who I'm talking about, but, you know, he's a Wall Street Journal bestseller, New York Times bestseller, but because he's bringing Stoicism back. And I think there couldn't be a better time for it, because, you know, silencing yourself and being able to discipline yourself and control yourself, as you say, you know, is a form of love, not only for yourself, but for other people.
Yeah. And that's like the fixing part is like, you know, if you're with the discipline, and I love Ryan Holiday, by the way, I read his book every morning.
And I do. He's an incredible author.
Yeah, really, really. So the fixing part is establishing the routines and having the discipline to get to a place where you're successful. And the broken piece comes in when you get to a point and you stop doing what you did to get there. So you so say a New Year's resolution. You put all these things in place. And, you know, part of the reason New Year's resolutions fall off is because people get to a certain point where they think, oh, like, it's good enough. And so they stop doing They stop going to the gym so much. They stop eating well all the time. They stop doing whatever it is that got them there, because it's a sense of like I'm completely graduated.
Yeah.
And so then, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, it's just that that's when then they fall back into, you know, overweight, feeling like crap, headaches, colds, all that stuff, because And then this turns into the broken conversation, because what really happened is they just lacked the discipline to keep going. They lacked the discipline to recognize what got them there in the first place.
Yeah. Wow. I love this conversation. I always love the conversations with you. I do. And we're going to go to break.
Yeah.
And when we come back, more with Sam Morris. He is the founder of the Unbreakable Man Project, which is an interactive web-based personal development program for men wanting to slay their mental dragons of depression, anxiety, and addiction. We'll be back with more of Sam Morris right after the break. Stay tuned, everyone. You're listening to One Life Radio.
Trust fund babies, Brooklyn loft, by the bathroom. You said let's talk, but my confidence is wearing off. Well, these are my people, these are my friends. She grabbed my face and that's when she said, I like.
Welcome back to One Life Radio, everyone. This is Bernadette with Ronaldo Davis, and we have Sam Morris on the line. He is the founder of the Unbreakable Man Project, an interactive web-based personal development program for men wanting to slay their mental dragons of depression, anxiety, and addiction. He is a certified personal development coach, recovery consultant, and health coach. You can find him on his website, themanunbreakable.com. Okay, Sam, we've got a couple of minutes here. Our topic today is, does trying to fix ourselves block us from living life? So, you know, when we use the term fix, does this mean that we're unhappy with who we are?
Yeah, totally not an acceptance of what we are. And that goes back to things like, I'm not worthy, I'm wrong, I'm broken, all that stuff. So it really comes down to the base level of thinking that you are not okay the way that you are.
Okay. Well, and so, but isn't it a good thing, you know, to look at yourself hard in the mirror from time to time, at least, and try to improve ourselves? Or is that a negative thing?
No, that's an amazing thing. That's absolutely what you should do. But it gets to the point where, you know, the tables turn or the scales tip in terms of, if you're always working on self-love, you know, what happens is that, if you're saying, you know, doing the I love myself practice in the mirror, for example, if you're always doing that and it's never sticking, like you never actually feel the self-love, it's because you have an underlying conversation of I'm not worthy, or I'm not worthy of love, I'm not worthy of the attention, I don't matter. So until that gets fixed, until that underlying root issue gets fixed, you know, it's blocking you from everything else that you really want. And a lot of times what we're doing with self-help or anything like that is that we're looking at really certain issues that we think are the problem. And so what we have to do to really, really fix and then move on is to look at what is actually coming up. So self-help is great in a sense that it can guide you towards something, but you can't go in with a dogmatic path, because then you get stuck. You basically, you know, it's like I said, if you're telling yourself I love myself in the mirror every morning for 3 minutes, but you're never feeling self-love, it's because you have an underlying thing. Self-love might not be the actual problem that you need to solve right away. It's another conversation about I'm not worthy of love.
Yeah. Should you do that? Should you tell yourself I love you every day? I'm thinking of, there's an SNL skit where I can't think of what it is, but I think at the end he would say, doggone it, I love myself, or something like that. I can't
Jack
remember.
Candy. Was it Jack Candy?
Yeah, there you go.
I believe that you should always look in the mirror and tell yourself that I love you. Even if some people do it for 5 minutes. I've heard there's a guy, Kamal Ravikant. He wrote a book, Love Yourself Like Your Life Depends Upon It.
Uh-huh.
Really, really insightful book. Great, great action items in there. And he recommends it. I do it at least every morning, because what it does is it gets you out of the mindless activity, right? Like you take a second when you're done brushing your teeth or shaving or washing your face or whatever, and just say, look yourself in your eyes and just, you know, acknowledge yourself. And yeah. Whether it's I love myself or I am here or I see you or whatever it is, just acknowledge that you are there and acknowledge yourself and take a look. And it's a really cool kind of mindset hack, really, because it takes you away from the rat race rushing around, and it gives you just that 1 second of like, I'm here with myself.
Well, and I think it sparks creativity. I'm thinking of a moment one time when it was one of my darkest times in my life, and I woke up in the middle of the night and I found myself staring at myself in the mirror, just trying to figure things out. And it resulted in me writing one of the best songs that I ever wrote. But I remember the feeling, and it really is a good feeling to be okay with looking yourself dead in the mirror and accepting what you see.
Yeah, and I guarantee you there are a lot of people listening right now that are thinking to themselves, that sounds like the worst thing ever. Because I've had a lot of people, I've asked my clients to do it a lot, and they say a lot of them can't do it. You know, a lot of it takes a little bit of work to get up to that, because it really goes back to that whole thing, you know, I don't matter, I'm not seen, I'm not worthy, people don't hear me. I mean, all these core beliefs, all these things that we establish as really, really young humans, is that they come up. A lot of this stuff bubbles up to the surface when we're forced to look at ourselves.
Well, yeah, and this is big business. I mean, I'm reading here that we spent over $11 billion on self-help last year, and of course this year it'll probably be more, but does it really help us? I mean, so how do we move to a state of acceptance of who we are rather than constantly trying to change? Isn't that in itself a version of like fixing ourselves?
To get into acceptance?
Well, not to get into, but just like constantly trying to change. It's too much of it, like another version of fixing ourselves.
This goes back to the whole underlying, if you're always trying to change something, that means you never feel okay. And that means that, you know, you can try 100 different self-help modalities, whatever it is,
right.
Anything from theta healing to REM sessions to NLP, whatever you want. But until you can feel worthy of yourself and accept yourself, none of it's going to stick.
You just made me think of something. Because there are people out there listening that will buy things to make themselves happy, you know, or accept.
Yeah.
You know, they think, oh, if I own this car, that'll make me happy. If I own this house, that'll make me happy. If I have this, it'll make me happy. And none of it makes you happy unless you love yourself first, right?
Yeah, and it sounds cliche, but it's so true. Because you can have all the things you want, the house. I mean, that's the guys that I work with are the guys that have it all, but they're still so unhappy. And so it's because deep down, like in this quarantine, for example, has brought up a lot of stuff about how, you know, like when kids were getting out of college or young adults, early 20s, and they had these conversations about I'm not worthy or I don't matter or, you know, no one's ever going to love me. A lot of people went and made these kick-ass careers, these really awesome jobs and succeeded and achieved. And now it's kind of being taken away from them, and those conversations that they never dealt with are back.
Yeah.
Because the identity of, like, the worthiness that they attach to cars, to houses, to jobs is not there anymore.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And I know I'm going to hear the music any second, so I just want to ask you quickly, you know, we've got about 45 seconds. What final advice do you have for listeners out there who continually try to fix themselves?
Look at what's really showing up. When you read things, don't ignore the voices in your head and what's really coming up for you. If you read something and you feel an energetic reaction to it, acknowledge it.
Yeah. And how important do you think is spirituality?
Spirituality is very important. To have a base of spirituality and to believe in something, it takes all the pressure off.
Yeah, no, I would agree. Thank you so much. Always a pleasure. Thank you so much. I just can't say it enough. To our listeners, too, I hope you enjoyed the show. You can find Sam on his website at themanunbreakable.com. Have a fantastic weekend, Sam. We really appreciate you jumping on the air with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. You guys have a great weekend, too.
All right. Thank you so much. Always a pleasure. That's Sam Morris. Everyone, get out there today. Enjoy this weekend, raining, whatever it's doing, wherever you are. If the sun is shining, try to get a little bit of it, because you only get one body, one mind, and one life. So get out there today and live it well.